The body of the Mexican gun hand was hauled off to the local undertaker's, where it would be displayed on the boardwalk in an upright coffin for a couple of days until it made its final trip to the nearby cemetery. The crowd had resumed their talking and shopping at the general store. Frank was sitting at a table in the saloon, having a drink. Steve Harlan walked in and up to Frank's table. Frank waved him to a chair, and Steve sat down.
You're pretty good, Drifter, but I think I can take you.
Want a drink, Steve?
The barkeep knows what I want. He's making a fresh pot of coffee. My comment doesn't worry you, Frank?
About you taking me? No, not at all.
You're very sure of yourself, aren't you?
I suppose so.
A pot of coffee and two cups were placed on the table, and the bartender quickly backed away, leaving the two men alone.
Paco was sure of himself, too.
Paco didn't make a study of his opponents.
And you have done that?
Oh, yeah.
You've studied me?
Indeed I have.
And you think you're better?
I know I am.
You are a very arrogant man, Drifter. Either that, you're playing mind games with me.
Up to you to decide which, Steve.
Steve poured a cup of coffee. A look of irritation passed over his face when he discovered there was no sugar bowl.
Damn.
Frank waved at the barkeep, making a spooning and stirring gesture. The barkeep nodded his head.
Settle down, Steve. Sweetener's on the way.
I like sugar in my coffee when I can get it. It's simply one of life's little pleasures.
A group of farmers entered the saloon and lined up at the bar ordering drinks. Steve glanced over at them.
Sodbusters. Willing to die for a few acres of land. I don't understand them.
The backbone of this nation, Steve.
So I've heard. Why don't they stay east of the Mississippi River and let the cattlemen have the land west of the river?
There's land aplenty for everybody out here, Steve. It's just a matter of working together and managing it.
Sodbusters are a bother, Frank. I don't like them. I don't like the fences they're always stringing.
You better get used to it. Farmers are here to stay in the West.
Not in this area, Frank.
Yeah, Steve. In this area.
I'm sorry to hear that, Frank. That makes us enemies.
Doesn't have to. You could always ride on out of here.
You can keep the pot here, Frank. I know how you like your coffee. I'll just get me a place at another table.
Don't you like my company, Steve?
You're beginning to stink like pig shit, Frank. I just never did like that smell. Something funny about pig shit, Frank?
You eat bacon, Steve?
You go to hell, Drifter.
Steve turned his back to Frank and stalked off to a table across the room. Frank watched him walk away. He knew Steve was not looking for gunplay this day. It was not yet time for that, but it would come. Claude walked over to Frank.
When you finish your coffee, I want you to meet someone.
The preacher and his sister?
How did you know that?
They're the only two people in town I haven't met.
Oh, sure, that's right. Well, they're really nice people.
I don't believe they have much use for me, Claude. Maybe we better put off this meeting.
They just got into this area a few months ago. They're from back east, you know.
Boston, probably.
I think that's right, Frank. You're a good guesser.
You really want me to meet them now, Claude?
Why not?
They just saw me kill a man. I doubt if they've ever seen anything like that. Not if they're from over-civilized Boston.
Over-civilized?
Forget I said that, Claude. All right, I'll meet him. Let me have another cup of coffee and a smoke, okay?
Sure. I'll have a cup with you, if you don't mind.
Frank signaled the barkeep for another cup.
You think Mark Rogers sent that gunman into town to kill you?
Sure. Probably wanted him to kill me in front of you folks. Send a message.
That's what I told Reverend Carmody and his sister. I guess right on that one.
You're a pretty good guesser yourself. Drink your coffee and let's go meet the Boston folks.
Reverend Carmody shook Frank's hand by the door.
I was informed that you really are the very famous pistol shooter, Mr. Morgan.
I suppose that's true, Preacher.
And I was also just informed that the man you dispatched to his maker was in the employ of a local rancher who was determined to drive the farmers off their land.
That is true.
I have never before witnessed such a dreadful spectacle. Such things simply aren't done in a civilized part of the country.
Lydia then fanned herself with the little hanky.
Well, give us time, ma'am.
Frank eyed the lady. She was a truly beautiful woman with light brown hair, great figure, heart-shaped face, and dark green eyes.
We're still in the growing stages out here. However, you'd better brace yourself, for you're sure to see more killing before this issue between the ranchers and the farmers is settled.
Perhaps I could speak to the ranchers.
Personally, I think you'd be wasting your time, but it's a free country.
I shall go with you, brother.
John Platt joined the small group.
A girl's over to the saloon. Want to know if Reverend Carmody would say a word or two at Paco's burying. They took up a collection to pay you for your services.
There will be no charge for it. Certainly I will conduct the services.
Well, I'll tell the girls.
Will the girls be there?
With all their feathers, frills, and paint. They might even sing a song in Paco's memory.
Oh, he was a close friend of theirs?
He was a damn good customer is what he was.
Oh, my.
That's just what the girls used to holler about 5 minutes after Paco got to their room. But they hollered it with a lot more enthusiasm.
I see.
Lydia's face flushed a bright scarlet.
I doubt it, ma'am. I really doubt it. See you good folks later.
Paco Morales was buried without fanfare the next day. Only Reverend Carmody, his sister Lydia, the gravedigger, and four whores had attended the services.
What the hell am I supposed to do with Paco's horse and gear, Frank?
If no one shows up to claim them, and I doubt if anyone will, they're yours.
A fine animal. And the saddle is inlaid with silver. Oh, hell with it. Let's go have a drink.
That might not be a good idea. I saw Victor Perkins ride into town and go into the saloon about a half hour ago.
Oh, he's no bother. He'll drink a bottle of whiskey, then go upstairs with one of the women.
I don't want to have to put lead into a drunk.
Hey, you won't. Vic is no gun hand. He fancies himself a lover, not a fighter.
Vic was propped up at the bar, drinking alone, when John and Frank walked into the saloon. Vic glanced at them, nodded his head in greeting, then turned his attention back to the booze. Frank noticed immediately that the young man was not wearing a gun. John had followed Frank's eyes.
He seldom packs iron. Can't hit the side of a large barn when he does. He's a big disappointment to his dad. His sister Lucy now, that's another story. She's a hellion and a crack shot. Folks tend to fight shy of her. She's got a bad temper and a foul mouth.
I've known a few like her.
The men took seats as far from the bar as they could.
John, Frank, what'll it be?
Beer.
Just coffee.
Right.
I seen all the lumber rolling to town this morning. We'll have us a school and a church house before long.
You a church-going man, John?
Not so as you'd notice. You?
No, but I certainly believe in a higher power. And I suspect I'm going to be judged harshly when my time comes. I think perhaps church is too late for me.
Preachers would argue that with you, Frank. But I know what you're saying. For you to take off your guns now would be the same as signing your own death warrant. You wouldn't last a week.
That statement flung Frank back into bitter memories. He slowly nodded his head.
I've tried to explain that to a couple of women over the years.
And they didn't buy it, did they?
No, they didn't.
And bless their hearts. Women see things different from a man.
Come on now, Vic, baby.
A woman was standing on the second floor landing looking down.
In a few minutes, Sally.
Now, baby. You know you don't do me no good after you've had too much to drink.
Vic tossed back what was left in his glass.
You're right. I'm coming up. Oh.
John and Frank sat in silence and watched the young man stagger across the floor and make his way up the stairs.
He's drunk already. He wasn't always like that. I remember him as a youngin'. He was a good boy. I don't know what happened to him, but he sure changed.
Heads up, Frank. Trouble's coming in.
Frank looked at the bat wings just as they were pushed open. Rod Harley stepped into the saloon. The man, dressed all in black, stared at Frank for a few seconds, then walked over to the bar, deliberately putting his back to Frank and John.
Beer.
There gonna be trouble here, Frank?
Probably. I guess the ranchers are pulling out all the stops now. Paco's not yet cold in the ground, and they're sending in another gun to try and nail me.
A couple of sodbusters walking across the street heading this way. They picked a hell of a time to get thirsty. You know that feller all dressed in black, Frank?
I heard of him. Rod Harley.
He quick on the shoot.
So I'm told.
Burl Hastings and Van Kalen walked into the saloon and up to the long bar. Rod Harley glanced at the pair and grimaced in distaste.
Smells like hog crap in here.
The farmers tensed, but other than that, they made no sign they had heard anything.
Don't you pig farmers ever take a bath?
Rod turned to look directly at the pair.
We're not looking for trouble.
No, of course not. You hide behind Frank Morgan and think he's gonna protect you.
That's a damn lie.
You calling me a liar, Sodbuster?
I'm saying that we haven't hired anyone to protect us. We can fight our own battles.
Then why don't you get a gun and face me?
Because they're not gun slicks.
Rod cut his eyes, looking at John Platt.
Who asked you to stick your lip into this, old timer?
I don't need no one's permission to speak.
You packing iron, old timer?
No, he isn't. But I am.
Took you long enough to make up your mind, Drifter.
Here I am, Rod. Now what the hell are you gonna do about it?
Rod turned to fully face Frank.
Kill you?
You got it to do. You ready?
Yeah.
Rod snaked his .45 from leather. Ooh! Frank's shot hit Rod in the belly and drove him back against the bar. Rod hit the coffee pot on the table, sending hot liquid all over John.
Gotcha!
Rod refused to go down. He tried again to hold his pistol steady. A slug knocked a hole in the ceiling. Sally was back on the second floor landing.
Oh, good God, what the hell's going on down there?
Damn you, Frank!
Rod's bullet went wild and up into the ceiling once again.
Oh, God damn it! It was just getting good!
Frank aimed again at Rod.
Oh!
And this time, the gunman sank to his knees, his pistol dropping from a numb hand. Rod clawed for his second six gun and managed to drag it out of leather, but he couldn't find the strength to cock it.
Oh!
Give it up, Rod.
Hell with you, Drifter. I'm gonna kill you.
He tried to lift his pistol, but could not. Blood leaked from Rod's mouth, and he dropped his pistol to the floor. Frank walked the short distance to the man and kicked both pistols away. He looked down at Rod. The man was leaking blood out of the bullet holes in his belly and chest, and blood was dripping from his mouth.
Damn you to hell, Drifter.
It was all your play, Rod.
Hurts.
Who sent you, Rod?
Perkins. There's more guns coming, Drifter. One of them will get you. You can't live through this.
You got kin, Rod?
No. No one who gives a damn, that is.
I'll see you get planted proper.
Have that preacher say a few nice words over me, Drifter.
All right.
I'll see you in hell, Drifter.
Frank watched in silence as Rod Harley closed his eyes for the last time. Reverend Carmody conducted the services for Rod Harley with only Frank, Lydia, and the gravediggers in attendance.
Very quaint custom here in the Wild West. You kill a man, then you attend his services.
I guess I owe that much to Rod.
It might have been you in the ground this day.
The only way that would happen is if my pistol misfired.
You're very sure of yourself, aren't you, Mr. Morgan?
I have to be, Miss Lydia. I got too many men gunning for me.
The three of them walked toward the edge of the graveyard. Lydia gestured toward four fresh graves.
Did you dispatch those people too, Mr. Morgan?
No, ma'am. Those are the graves of the Norton family. Father, mother, and sons. Dick, Abby, Hubert, and Charles. They were killed by the ranchers.
Oh, I didn't know.
Now you do.
Yes, so I do. But when will it stop?
When both sides agree to sit down and talk and reach some kind of agreement.
That doesn't seem to be such an insurmountable problem.
You don't know how much the ranchers hate the farmers.
I'm beginning to.
It wouldn't surprise me a bit if they burn down the church once it's built.
You
can't be serious. Burn down a house of God? I never heard of such an atrocious act.
We'll see.
Frank gathered up the reins and swung into the saddle.
You folks have a nice day.
Grant Perkins and Mark Rogers met in a line shack in the mountains. It was cold that high up, and a fire was set in the pot-bellied stove. Coffee was boiling.
Now what?
We keep sending men against Frank Morgan.
I got a better idea. Let's burn out the farmers.
Mark walked over to the stove and poured two cups of the strong brew.
Whatever. We have to do something. The sodbusters started building that damn church and schoolhouse today.
We'll burn it first. As soon as they get the frame up, we'll burn it down.
I want that damn Frank Morgan dead, though.
As soon as we torch the church, he'll go on a rampage. Then we can ambush him.
Mark nodded his head and sat back down at the beat-up old table.
That sounds good to me. Yeah. Ambush the son of a bitch. And I've got just the man for it.
Who?
Ray Hinkle. He's supposed to be the best.
Sounds good to me.
Lydia was sitting by Lucille Jones. The Carmandys were staying with the Joneses while the church, come schoolhouse, and their quarters were being built.
What do you think about Frank Morgan?
I find him, well, rather attractive. In a rough-looking sort of way.
Lydia looked around quickly to see if her brother had heard her reply. He had not.
So do I, Lydia. He's also rather mysterious, don't you think?
Oh, yes. Where is his home?
Oh, he bought some land just outside of town.
No, I mean his real home.
I don't know. I don't think he has one. But I've heard that he's a rich man.
Rich? A wandering gunman is rich.
Yes, he is.
Dan stepped into the kitchen of the home through the open back door.
Oh, coffee, honey?
Please.
Dan sat down at the table.
What is Mr. Carmody doing?
Sitting outside, reading the Bible.
You know he's called the Drifter?
It fits him. A horse, a dog, and a gun. That's all he appears to have, and he's rich.
Dan sugared his coffee.
He's a strange man. Complex, I guess some would call him.
That's a good description of him. Yes, complicated. Fits him well.
Frank was sitting on a bench outside his house, enjoying the cool of the late afternoon, Wolf on the ground by his side.
All hell's about to break loose in this country, and we're right in the middle of it.
Frank put a hand down on Wolf's head, and the big cur stirred under his touch.
The farmers think it's been rough so far, but they ain't seen nothing yet. It's about to get nasty, I'm thinking.
Wolf looked up at Frank.
So, old boy, I want you to be extra careful. Don't leave this area. I just wish to hell you understood what I was saying.
Frank looked into Wolf's dark eyes.
Sometimes I think you really do. And I hope this is one of those times. Because if one of those gun slicks hurts you, well, that would really rile me good.
Frank looked up as a half a dozen mounted men rode past his place. The horses wore the Diamond brand. None of the men looked in Frank's direction.
I hope no farmers are in town.
He made a mental note to tell the farmers not to go into town alone and to always go armed. He told them that before, but a reminder wouldn't hurt.
Real cowboys are getting scarce in this area. Either that or the working hands are staying close to the bunkhouse.
Frank didn't dwell much more on what the immediate future held in store. He felt he knew. The Diamond and GP spreads were going to pull out all the stops, and the future looked bloody.
And I'll be right in the middle of it.
The darkness was slowly closing around him.
So be it.
Frank swung down from the saddle at the livery. He had not been to town for several days.
Got two new businesses coming in, Frank.
Oh?
You bet. Got a lady's shop coming in. One of them that's built with two P's and an E on the end. A chape, I think they call it. Really high class. Another one is a leather and gun shop. Them carpenters working over yonder is from the county seat. The businesses will be ready in a couple of weeks. Frank, did you have anything to do with this?
No, I didn't, John. but the valleys are getting populated, and that sort of news gets out.
I bet you Perkins and Rogers is both fit to be tied about this.
Frank had to smile at that. He felt John was right. The GP and Diamond owners were probably livid with rage.
Don't you expect, Frank?
I'm sure you're right.
The new preacher and the school marm is over to the general store visiting with Joe and Theta. That Lydia Carmody is a good-looking woman. She's ripe for the picking, I'd say.
Yeah, she's very attractive, for sure.
I figured you'd notice.
Be kind of hard not to notice.
I'd say so. For a school marm, she's a looker for sure. Probably got a temper like a rattler, though. A woman that pretty has got to have some mean faults.
I wouldn't know, John. Any Diamond or GP hands causing any trouble in the valleys?
Not a peep out of none of them. And that kind of worries me. I wonder what Rogers and Perkins is up to.
Maybe nothing.
And don't be believing that, Frank. You can bet they're plotting and a-scheming something.
Probably.
Frank cut his eyes to a lone rider just reaching the far edge of town.
And there he is.
Who is that?
Bobby Doolin.
You've got to be kidding. I heard he retired 10 years ago and bought a ranch down in Mexico.
He did. His gun isn't for hire. Hasn't been in years.
Then what the hell's he doing here?
He's been looking for me for years. Takes 5 or 6 months off every year just to try to find me.
I gather he don't like you much.
He might say that.
What the hell'd you ever do to him?
I killed his brother.
Well, that might be enough to rile some people. I never heard nothing about his brother. Didn't know he had one.
Jeff was a two-bit thief. Fancied himself a gun hand. He braced me down in Kansas 10 years ago, about this time of year. Tried to talk him out of it, but he wouldn't listen. He pulled on me. He died hard. Took 3-4 days. Shortly after that, Bobby started tracking me. Now, he's found me.
Doolin was said to be fast.
He is.
Doolin reined up in front of the livery and dismounted. He looked at Frank and grinned like a snake.
Hello, Morgan.
Doolin.
You're a hard man to find, Morgan.
I stay on the move.
I've been looking for you for a long time.
Now you found me.
I sure have. You didn't have no call to kill my brother. None at all.
Your kid brother braced me, Doolin. Forced my hand. I didn't have any choice in the matter.
You don't now, neither.
You know, that's what that little pissant brother of yours said just before he tried to draw on me and got killed because of his big mouth. I guess letting your mouth override your ass runs in the family.
Richard and Lydia Carmody stepped out of the general store with Joe Wallace. Joe pointed toward the livery, and the three of them stepped off the short boardwalk and began walking toward the stable.
The preacher and his sister wanted a wheel on their buggy repair to fix the loose rim. It's over yonder on the east side of the barn.
Relax, old man. There ain't gonna be no trouble right off. I want me a bath and a hot meal first. Then I'll deal with you, Drifter. Where's the bathhouse?
What passes for one is behind the hotel, which is on the second floor of the saloon. Ask a clerk.
I'll do that. You take good care of my horse, old man.
I take good care of all the horses, no matter who they belong to.
That's very funny. Just see to my horse, old-timer.
Bobby turned away and walked toward the saloon. Richard, Lydia, and Joe Wallace approached Frank.
A friend of yours?
Not hardly. He came here to kill me.
Lydia fanned herself with a hanky. Frank watched her, hoping the lady had brought an ample supply of little hankies, for she sure gave them a workout.
An old grievance?
It happened many years ago, down in Kansas.
Must have been something terrible for a man to carry a grudge for many years.
I shot his brother.
Oh, my word. Was his brother a desperado?
He was a loudmouth piece of crap.
You certainly do have a unique way with words, Mr. Morgan.
I apologize if I offended you.
Them carpenters is coming right along.
Yes, we're going to be a regular town very soon.
A lot of riders coming from the east and the west.
Diamond and GP men.
John shaded his eyes with a hand.
I don't like this, Frank.
What does this mean? Why are all those men coming into town?
We'll soon know.
Your buggy is repaired if you're ready to pull out, Reverend Carmody, and I'd sure suggest you and your sister do that. It's about to get real touchy here.
No. I want to speak with the ranchers.
I'll go with you. A voice of peace must be heard. Guns will not settle this matter. Violence begets violence.
Well said, sister.
Suit yourselves.
The GP and Diamond Riders, about 20 in all, swung in and reined up in front of the saloon. John eyed the men.
Rogers and Perkins and their foreman. And a whole passel of gun hands.
It's a show of force. I'm guessing they're hoping this will scare off some farmers.
Oh, how childish.
Them ain't children, Missy. Those guns they're packing are real.
Who's that young man standing next to Rogers?
That's his son, Mark Jr. He fancies himself a hand with a gun.
And he's wearing one, too.
Come on, Richard.
Frank and the liveryman watched as Richard and Lydia walked across the street and up to the ranchers and their hired guns.
Something's gonna pop over yonder.
It won't be a gun. The preacher's unarmed, I hope.
Mark Rogers suddenly slapped the preacher, knocking the man to the dirt.
Oh, hell!
You beast!
Lydia kneeled down beside her brother. Even from where he stood across the street, Frank could see that Richard had a bloody mouth.
Shut up, you psalm-singing bitch!
That does it.
And Frank began his walk across the street. Behind him, unknown to Frank, John reached for a Winchester and levered in a round.
Morgan's coming.
Across the street, Joe Wallace had picked up a rifle and levered a round into the chamber. His wife, Theda, did the same, stepping to the wide front doors of the business to stand by her husband. Inside the saloon, the barkeep had picked up a sawed-off double-barreled shotgun, checked the loads, and walked to the bat wings.
You stay out of this, Morgan. This ain't your affair.
The hell it isn't. You all right, Richard?
The preacher was getting to his feet, holding a bloody handkerchief to his busted mouth.
I'll live.
You buy into this and you're dead, Morgan. You're outnumbered 20-1.
And so will you be.
John Platt was in front of his livery as he drew a bead on Rogers with his Winchester.
I'll put lead in your mark, I swear I will.
You'd shoot me, John? After all we went through, you'd shoot me?
And I'll blow your head off, Grant.
The barkeep was standing behind the bat wings.
I'll get you and several more before it's all over.
And we'll get three or four more before the gun smoke is gone.
Joe Wallace was in front of the general store.
Bet on it!
The ranchers and their hired guns all took long looks around them. The three rifles were bad enough, but the double-barreled greener less than 20 feet away would do terrible damage. And they all knew Frank Morgan would not go down easy. He'd killed three or four before he was down. Grant Perkins stepped forward.
Now just settle down, people. Don't let those fingers get itchy on the triggers.
Frank pointed at Mark Rogers.
You, step out here and face me.
I'm no fast gun, Morgan.
Fists, Rogers. Just you and me.
You're a fool, Morgan. I'll beat you to death.
Mark stepped out of the crowd and let his gun belt fall. Frank unbuckled his gun belt and looped it on a hitch rail.
You got it to do, big mouth.
He stepped closer and busted the man in the mouth with a hard right fist. Roger's head snapped back, and he was staggered by the force of Frank's punch. He sleeved his face and saw the blood from his ruined nose soak into his shirt. Roger shook his head and charged Frank. Frank sidestepped and hammered Roger's kidneys with hard blows as he passed. Roger spun around quicker than Frank was expecting. He popped Frank on the jaw with a big fist swung from the hips. Frank shook his head and backed up. The man could punch.
Kill him, Pa!
Mark Jr. was behind his father. Rogers bore in, both fists swinging, blood streaming from his face. Frank ducked and bobbed and weaved. He knew more than a little about boxing. The moving about seemed to infuriate the rancher, especially after his wild punches hit nothing but air.
Stand still and fight, damn you!
Come get me, you big ape.
Frank danced on his toes from side to side, grinning around a swollen lip. Rogers rushed Frank. Frank gave the man a left and right to the jaw. Rogers backed up, dazed, and just for a few seconds dropped his guard. Frank stepped up to the mark and hammered the rancher. He landed a right to the mouth, a left to the side of his head, a right to the belly, a left to the face. Blood poured from Roger's mouth and nose. The man was a barroom brawler, but he knew nothing of boxing. Frank tripped the big man and punched him twice with short, sharp blows to the face as he went down. When Rogers just lay there, Frank stepped back.
Get up and fight, you bastard. Or would you rather fight women and little children like the cowardly bully you are?
On the boardwalk, Bobby Doolin stood and smoked a cigar. watching the fight with interest. He knew from years of studying Frank Morgan that Morgan was an excellent fighter who seldom lost a bare-knuckle fight. Rogers slowly got to his feet and stared at Frank from under cut and bleeding brows, his eyes almost swollen shut. He charged Frank, hoping to get him in a bear hug and crush the life from him. Frank nimbly sidestepped and kicked the big man on the side of his knee with the point of his boot.
Oh, hell, Paul! You can do better than this! Get up and whoop his ass!
If the rancher even heard his son's words, he did not acknowledge them. He rose to his feet, swaying unsteadily, and lifted his fist slowly up in front of his face. Frank had already started a punch from just about knee high. The blow caught Rogers on the side of the jaw. Rogers' head exploded in a burst of light and pain. Only the hitch rail saved him from hitting the dirt. The man clung desperately to the rail, his legs splayed out crookedly in front of him. Frank stepped closer and went to work on the man's belly. He pounded the man with lefts and rights. Rogers began to sink slowly to the ground. Frank stepped back and wound up a right fist. He blasted the rancher on the side of the jaw. This time, he did not get up. The rancher stayed on his hands and knees for a few seconds, watching the blood pouring from his face to stain the dirt under him a bright red.
Oh, Paul. Get your face out of the horse crap. That ain't dignified.
Get him up and put some water on him.
The diamond foreman looked at Frank.
This ain't over, Morgan. Not by a long shot.
Anytime. Anywhere.
Mark Rogers was dragged over to a horse trough and dunked in face first.
Oh, my.
Lydia again gave her little hanky a workout. Mark Rogers pulled his head out of the trough. He then tried to stand up. He could not. His wobbly legs simply would not support him. He sat down hard, clinging to the side of the horse trough.
I'll kill you, Morgan.
Frank ignored him and buckled on his gun belt. He looked up into the cold eyes of Bobby Doolin. Doolin smiled at him, then abruptly turned away and walked back into the saloon. Frank glanced at the preacher.
Go over to the store and get you something to put on that busted mouth. Go on, Lydia. You go with him.
Frank pushed through the crowd of gunslicks and entered the saloon. The bartender put away his greener as Frank walked up to the bar.
Give me a beer.
Hell of a good fight, Frank. Rogers had it coming to him.
It isn't gonna change anyone's mind.
Probably not. But it was damn sure worth seeing.
Thanks for your backup.
Don't mention it.
You made some enemies today, for sure.
They'll get over it. If they want a drink, that is. Nearest other watering hole is a 2-day ride away.
Frank smiled, then grimaced at the pain in his swollen lip where Rogers had hit him.
In that case, I think they'll get over it quickly.
You're pretty good with your fists, Morgan.
Bobby Doolin was sitting in the shadows of a rear table.
Remind me not to tangle with you bare knuckles.
Frank slowly turned around.
Fists or guns, Doolin. Either way, you'll lose.
You're a very confident man, Morgan.
Some have even called me arrogant, Bobby. But I prefer to think of it as knowing the limitations of my enemies.
He turned his back to the gunman and picked up his beer with his left hand. He let his right hand hang down next to his hip.
Your right hand sore and getting stiff, Frank?
My right hand is fine.
That's good, Frank. I wouldn't want you to have to try and beat me with a bum hand.
Worry about yourself, Bobby.
Frank watched the gunman's image in the big mirror behind the bar.
Relax, Frank. I won't brace you today. When I do, I want it to be on the up and up. Not like when you killed my little brother.
That was as fair a fight as it could be, Doolin.
He didn't have a chance, Morgan. My brother was no gun hand.
Then he shouldn't have braced me.
He had his pride.
Frank reached into his vest pocket for the makings to roll a cigarette.
You understand pride, don't you, Frank? Answer me, Morgan.
Frank turned to face the man. He'd had enough of his jawing.
Don't talk to me about pride, Doolin. Your brother didn't have nothing to be proud of. He was an asshole, just like you. And it was that got him killed. He thought, because his big brother was good with a gun, then he should be too. But he wasn't. If you're ready to meet your maker and be judged, We could call out the band and dance right now.
Doolin tensed, and then smiled, his body relaxing.
Nah, Frank, not now. Later.
He stepped away from the table and walked to the stairs without looking back. On the landing, he paused and looked at Frank.
When I killed you, Morgan, I wanted to be out in the open, with lots of people watching. I want as many people as possible to see you fall.
Doolin then walked to his room.
That man sure got an angry bee in his bonnet.
An old grudge is eating at him like a sickness. He refuses to see but one side of the issue.
You're gonna have to kill that man, Frank.
I know. Or he's gonna kill me.
He's that good?
He's quick as a snake. Only the real good ones are still around. Most of the others have been long in the ground. You don't get to be Doolin's age without knowing how and when to use a six killer.
How about the ones the ranchers have hired?
A few are pretty good. And you can bet the ranchers paid plenty to get them here. The rest are big talk and little else.
And you're caught right in the middle between the whole bunch.
Sure looks that way, doesn't it?
As he rode Stormy toward his new farm, Frank thought about the day he'd killed the younger Doolin more than 10 years before. Frank had been in Kansas City for about a week, staying at the Dorchester Hotel. One night, while he was soaking in a hot bathtub in the communal bathroom, Frank saw a hand reach in through the door and take his hat off the peg it was hanging on. Frank jumped out of the tub and rushed to the door, only to find his hat lying crumpled in the hallway. Minus the expensive and distinctive hat band it had had on it. The band was made of solid silver conchos sewn into a rawhide strip that encircled the hat. 3 days later, while eating in the hotel dining room, Frank saw a young man enter with three of his friends. The man was dressed all in black, with a black leather vest and black hat that had Frank's hat band on it. Frank let the men get seated and give their order, and then he approached the table. Frank stopped next to the man wearing his hat band.
Howdy.
The man glanced up at Frank and then made a show of ignoring him. Frank tapped the man on the shoulder.
Excuse me, but that's my hat band you're wearing, and I'd like it back.
What?
You heard me. Now, the only question is, are you going to give it to me, or am I going to have to take it off your dead body?
The man jumped to his feet and squared off, his hand moving toward the pistol on his right hip.
I bought this hat band myself off a Mexican over a month ago.
You're a liar, and I can prove it.
One of the other men at the table stood up.
Now just hold on, mister.
Take the band off and look at the back of one of the conchos. My name, Frank Morgan, is engraved on the silver, as well as the name of the man who made it for me in New Mexico last year, Felipe Hernandez.
You're Frank Morgan?
The man moved backward a step.
Yep, and that's my hat band.
Maybe you ought to just give him the band, Jeff.
Hell no. I done told you this ain't his band. It's mine, bought fair and square.
Then all you have to do, mister, is let me see the back of the conchos. If my name isn't there, I'll apologize and pay for you and your friend's meal.
Nobody calls Jeff Doolin a liar.
The young man's fingers twitched next to the butt of his gun.
If you go for that gun, all they'll be calling you is dead, Mr. Doolin. Now either hand me that hat band or hook and draw.
Doolin snatched at his pistol, and Frank's slug took him in the upper right shoulder before he could clear leather. The young man spun around. On the floor, he held his right shoulder with his left hand. When Frank saw that none of Doolin's friends were going to join in the fracas, he bent over and took the hat band off the wounded man's hat. He handed it over to the man who'd spoken earlier.
Do you see the names Frank Morgan and Felipe Hernandez on the back of one of the conchos?
The man examined the band, and then he nodded quickly.
Sure do, Mr. Morgan.
Thank you, gentlemen. Now, you'd better get a doctor to take a look at the young Mr. Doolin there before he bleeds to death.
As it turned out, Jeff Doolin didn't bleed to death. Instead, he got an infection in his wound, and it took him almost a week to die. A slow, painful, agonizing death. Frank had left Kansas City the day Jeff Doolin was buried and 2 days before his older brother, gunfighter Bobby Doolin, arrived and found out what had happened. The incident almost made Frank hang up his guns, for he'd done his dead-level best to spare the life of the young thief. Stealing a hatband was not exactly a crime a man should be killed for, Frank had reasoned, and for a time he was despondent over the results of the showdown in the hotel. But life went on, and Frank continued to drift, moving from one lonesome town to another. It was 2 years later that he heard Bobby Doolin was looking for him, seeking revenge for him killing his younger brother. As he rode, Frank thought about this and other events in his past. Maybe it was time for him to finally settle down. Hell, the farm he just bought seemed as good a place as any, and better than most. He could just see the famous gunman Frank Morgan walking behind a plow mule or herding stubborn cows into the barn for early morning milking. No, right now he had other things on his mind, like saving the lives of farmers who were too inexperienced to save themselves or their wives and children from the greed and avarice of the ranchers. Back at his farm, Wolf met Frank from where he'd been waiting in the barn.
Come on, Wolf.
Frank rubbed Wolf's ears.
I swear, you lazy hound. You'd sleep through the barn burning down if I let you.
After a meal of biscuits so stale he had to dunk them in his coffee to chew them, and a half dozen scrambled hen's eggs, Frank read another story in his paperback book. This one concerned a young man who traveled around the country engaging in bare-knuckle fights until finally meeting up with a farmer's daughter, who convinced him to marry her and settle down on a farm next to her daddy's. Frank smiled at the romantic picture the story painted about bare-knuckle fighting and the men who made their living doing it. He remembered a few years back when he was braced in a saloon by a man who thought he was tough. The man threatened to beat Frank to death, so Frank gave him the chance. After the fight, a broad-shouldered man with close-cropped hair came over to Frank's table. Without saying a word, he bent over and applied a bit of plaster to Frank's ear, causing the bleeding to stop immediately.
Thanks, mister. Can I buy you a drink?
Now what kind of a question is that to ask an Irishman, boyo?
The man sat down. He stuck out a hand the size of a ham.
My name's John L. Sullivan, and I'm pleased to meet you.
John L. Sullivan, the prize fighter?
One and the same, me fine friend.
But don't you usually fight back east, in Boston and New York?
Aye, but I'm out here on a publicity tour. My manager has me going into all these towns and offering to fight anyone, gloves or bare knuckles, for $500.
He leaned back as the barman put a glass of whiskey on the table. John took the man's arm.
Ho ho, now don't be hasty, my man. Just leave the bottle and we'll settle up with you when we're done.
Very well.
As they talked and became friends, John had told Frank he was a very gifted amateur fighter, but he had some basic flaws in his setup, and that's why the man had been able to hit his head and split his ear. After another few whiskeys, John had offered to take Frank out back and give him some lessons in the manly art of self-defense. Frank had readily agreed, and for the next 2 hours, the two big men sparred out behind the saloon. John showing Frank how to keep his left hand high to protect his head and face, while keeping his right fist at his side, ready to unload a haymaker when the opportunity arose. Frank ended up buying John and his manager dinner at the finest hotel in the town, and watching the next morning when John beat the crap out of two big strapping farm boys who outweighed him by 50 pounds. As he climbed on the stage, John winked at Frank, who was standing nearby.
And remember, old son, keep that left hand high.
Frank looked down at Wolf, who was chewing on a biscuit as hard as one of his bones.
Yeah, boy. John L. is some kind of fighter.
The church come schoolhouse was finished in record time. The carpenters began work on a small house for Richard and Lydia Carmody. Another team of workmen came into the settlement and began working on the two buildings that would house the new businesses. Progress was very evident in the settlement. Frank was standing in the livery with John Platt and Tom Johnson.
And we still ain't got a name for this place. But I tell you what, we need more than a name.
What?
Tom was waiting while his wife, Colleen, shopped at the general store.
A cafe.
You know, that's what Charlie Jordan did back east.
Who's Charlie Jordan?
One of the new bunch of farmers that come in last month. He isn't happy working the land. That's what his wife, Becky, told my wife. Charlie had him a little cafe back east.
You don't say.
Sure enough, him and Becky both cooked, and I can tell you flat out that he's a better cook than Farmer.
We've got to stop it now or give it up forever.
Mark Rogers said nothing in reply to Grant Perkins.
Did you hear me?
The bruises on his face from the beating he'd taken during his fight with Frank had faded, but were still visible, like shadows on his skin. Physically, he was fine. Mentally, the rancher was slowly slipping toward the edge of a breakdown. The big man had never lost a fist fight in his adult life, and losing to Frank had taken a tremendous toll on him, especially since it happened with not only his son watching, but half the town.
Yeah, I heard you.
Well?
Do whatever you feel is necessary. You can use the men I hired. I done told my foreman you're the boss.
What the hell's wrong with you, Mark?
Nothing.
That's crap. Look, if you're all upset about losing that fight with Morgan, don't be. One of the gun hands on my payroll told me that Frank learned to box from a professional fighter named Sullivan. It's gonna take a professional to beat him.
Yeah, I guess so.
You interested in what I have in mind?
No. Just do it.
And I can use your men?
I done said you could.
Grant stood up and put on his hat.
You need some rest, Mark. Maybe you ought to go to the city and get yourself a woman. Get laid. Get drunk.
That's a good idea. I'll think about that.
Grant moved toward the door of the line shack. He paused and looked back at his friend.
I'm gonna rip the lid off this thing, Mark. Blood is gonna flow.
Yeah. Good luck.
Frank stood in the doorway of his house and rolled a cigarette. He ducked his head to light a match. Frank jumped back into the house. Wolf headed for safety behind the sofa that had been delivered just the day before.
Wolf, stay.
Frank grabbed up his rifle and snuck to the back door. He circled around the small house, working his way behind the barn. Frank would be surprised if the man who was shooting at him was anyone other than Ray Hinkle. Ray was known as an ambusher. Ray also did not like Frank. The man had made that known more than once. Frank waited silently. He would not make a move or throw a shot until he had a target. He'd learned a long time ago that patience was at least as important in a gun battle as shooting straight was. The shot had come, Frank guessed, from a small grove of trees just across the road from his house, the only logical place if the shooter wanted to remain hidden. On either side of the stand of timber, there were acres of open land with little or no cover for anyone to hide behind. Frank waited. Miles away from Frank's place, one of Paul Adams' sons, Jimmy, lay badly wounded in a ditch, several miles from his home spread. He had been shot in the back from ambush earlier in the day and lay unconscious. The only thing that had prevented him from bleeding to death was the mud he lay in. It had formed a natural bandage of sorts over the wound. His father and brothers were frantically looking for the young man.
No!
Also miles away from Frank's place, farmer Bob Frazier watched in horror as his wife Nellie was stripped naked and assaulted by masked men. Bob had been knocked unconscious, and when he woke up, he had been tied to a post.
Stop it! Have you no decency? My Nellie's a good woman!
Bob could do nothing except try not to look at the scene through the tears that formed in his eyes.
Stop it!
No, Bob! You bastards!
Now, little lady.
Nellie lay there, her mind fuzzy from the agonizing pain of her wounds, and watched through eyes swollen nearly shut as the man who shot her husband holstered his pistol. He looked down and saw her watching him, and he must have had at least a shred of decency buried deep in him somewhere, for he blushed under her accusatory gaze.
What are you looking at?
He leaned over, staring into her eyes, then rolled her over onto her face so she couldn't see him anymore. She lay there, trying not to suffocate in the soft dirt. Her mind went to her children, and she thanked God they were off visiting. Frank's patience finally paid off. After almost an hour of no movement in the copse of trees across from his house, he saw a small bush move slightly. Squinting his eyes, he could see a leg sticking out from behind a large oak tree. The man waiting there must have crept up and had to straighten out his leg. Frank pulled up his gun and took careful aim. Frank got to his feet and started running across the road, circling the stand of timber and coming up behind the wounded man. As Frank suspected, it was Ray Hinkle. He was trying to crawl to his horse, dragging his bleeding leg behind him.
Give it up, Ray!
Hinkle stopped his crawling and rolled over onto his back, staring at his enemy with eyes filled with hatred and envy.
Damn you, Frank!
That make you feel better, Ray?
Almost had you, Morgan. If you hadn't ducked your head to light that damn cigarette, God, I'd have put lead right between your eyes and blowed your damn head off.
Well, Ray, continuing with what if your aunt had been born with balls, she'd have been your uncle.
Huh?
Never mind, Ray. Who hired you to ambush me? Was it Grant or Rogers?
Go to hell, Morgan.
Frank bent down, chucked Hinkle's pistol out of leather, and picked up his rifle off the ground from where the ambusher had dropped it when Frank shot him.
Nice rifle, Ray.
It served me well.
Meaning you killed a lot of people with it. That leg's bleeding bad, Ray. Tell me who hired you, and I'll tend to it.
Oh, you bastard, Drifter. You won't touch me.
Have fun crawling into town.
Frank swung the rifle over his shoulder and turned to walk away.
What? What do you mean?
Hinkle took a bandana from around his neck and placed it against the hole in his leg, trying to slow the bleeding down. Frank stopped and turned back around to face him.
I mean, I'm gonna take your horse.
What? You can't do that, Morgan!
Watch me.
I'll die out here!
Probably. It's a long way into town, and the way that leg of yours is leaking, I figure you'll run out of blood before you make it a mile.
Oh, Grant Perkins! He's the big he-wolf now!
Hinkle pushed harder on the bandana as blood began to flow around it.
What do you mean?
Well, he's the boss! Something's happened to Rogers. He don't act right, so I've been told.
Rogers is out of this?
I reckon so. He told Grant to run things. That's the way I heard it anyways.
Frank stared at Hinkle for a long moment.
I ought to kill you right here and now, Ray.
But you won't, Morgan. That ain't the way you do things.
You sure about that?
I'm sure, Morgan. Tell you what. You back off and get me on my horse, and I'm gone.
You expect me to believe that?
I ain't no liar, Morgan. If I say I'll do something, I'll do it.
It's gotten back to me that several times over the years you said you were gonna kill me.
Yeah, well, them was just words.
Frank had noticed that Ray Hinkle had let go of the bandana with his right hand and was slowly inching it toward his belly. Frank knew he probably had a little derringer behind his belt buckle.
You hear me, Morgan? It was only words. A man's got to make his brags every now and then.
I hear you, Ray.
The hammer on Ray's rifle had been in full cock position when Frank picked it up. Frank tightened his grip on the rifle and moved the muzzle slightly on his shoulder. Hinkle did not notice the movement.
How about it, Morgan? You let me go and I'm out of this country for good.
Sure, Ray. I'm game for that.
You mean that, Morgan?
I said it, didn't I?
I'm gonna get up on my knees now, Morgan.
Go ahead.
Hinkle got to his knees and made a grab for his belly gun. Frank let him make his move until the little derringer was in plain sight and Hinkle was earing back the hammer. Then, without aiming, Frank jerked the rifle off his shoulder. The bullet entered Hinkle's body just under his right arm, close to the armpit. Ray Hinkle then collapsed, dead on the ground. Frank smiled grimly at the thought that Hinkle was killed by a bullet from his own gun, one that the back shooter had admitted had been used to kill many others. Frank had gotten Ray's horse and tied the man belly down across the saddle. He had put Hinkle's rifle in the boot, then led the animal out of the timber and across the road. He had saddled up Stormy, told Wolf to stay in the barn, and headed for the GP range. At the main gate, Frank untied the rope holding Ray in the saddle, letting Ray's body fall to the ground. He ground-reined Ray's horse, and then laid Hinkle's rifle across the dead man's body. Frank stepped back into the saddle and headed for town. John Platt watched Frank swing down from the saddle at the livery.
All hell's fixing to break loose, Frank.
What happened?
Bob Fraser's been killed and his wife raped.
Damn. Who did it?
I don't know for sure, but that ain't all. John Adams' boy, Jimmy, was bushwhacked out on John's land, left for dead. John himself dug the bullet out and the boy's resting. He might make it.
The lid's coming off, John. Ray Hinkle tried to take me out. Perkins had hired him.
Damn. You're right, Frank. Things is heating up something fierce around here.
John glanced over Frank's shoulder.
And speaking of heating up, here comes a couple of gun hands riding into town now.
That's George Cummins on the bay. I don't know the other one.
I do. He's been around for a time. Name's Nick Barra. Fancies himself a fast gun.
Never heard of him.
He ain't never faced no real gun hand. He killed a couple of farmers back some months ago. I reckon he's got a bloodlust running hot and hard in him.
I hate to hear that.
The two gun hands reined up in front of the saloon and started to enter, but they both spotted Frank and paused on the boardwalk as they made some comment about it. They then turned and walked through the back wings.
They know you're here.
Yeah, but first they have to get some courage out of a bottle and talk it up in front of the people in the saloon about how they're gonna take the famous Frank Morgan down.
And then?
And then, I reckon, there'll be a showdown between us.